Chapter 4. The first regimental reunion since we returned from the war is to take place in the main hall at Konersmann's. All the boys have been invited. It should be a great show. Carl, Albert, Jupp, and I arrive an hour too soon. We were so impatient to see all the old faces again. In the meantime, we sit in the lounge outside the main room and wait for the arrival of Willy and the others. We are just tossing for a round of Steinhager gin when the door opens and Ferdinand Kozola comes in. We are so taken aback at his appearance that the coin drops from our hands. He's in civvies! Like most of us, he has till now been wearing his old uniform. But today, in honor of the occasion, he has turned out in civvies. And now there he stands in a blue overcoat with velvet collar, a green hat on his head, and a butterfly collar and tie. It makes an utterly different man of him. We have hardly recovered from our astonishment when Tjaden appears. He too is in civvies, also for the first time. A striped waistcoat, bright yellow shoes, and a walking stick with a silvered crook. With chin well up, he comes strutting down the room. As he encounters Kozola, he draws back. Kozola bulks likewise. Neither has ever seen the other except in uniform. They look each other up and down for a second, then burst into roars of laughter. Each thinks the other in civilian togs too damned funny for anything.
"Why, Ferdinand, I always thought you were one of the toffs," grins Tjaden.
"How you mean?"
says Kozola, ceasing to laugh.
"Why, here,"
Tjaden points to Kozola's overcoat.
"Looks to me as if you'd bought it off a rag-and-bone merchant."
"Ass," growls Ferdinand fiercely, turning away. But I see that he slowly turns red. I can hardly believe my eyes. He's actually upset. And when he thinks himself unobserved, he surreptitiously examines the ridiculed coat. In uniform, he would never have thought of such a thing. But now he is actually rubbing out a couple of stains with the shiny cuff of his sleeve. Then he looks a long time across at Karl Brugger, who has on a swagger new suit. He does not know I have been watching him. After a while, he asks me,
"What's Karl's father? Do you know?"
"District judge," I answer.
"So, district judge, eh?" he repeats meditatively. "And Ludwig, what's his?"
"Income tax inspector." He is silent a while. Then he says,
"Well, I suppose you won't be having anything more to do with me soon."
"Your potty, Ferdinand," I reply. He shrugs his shoulders doubtfully. I cannot get over my surprise. It is not merely that he looks different in these damned civilian togs, but he has actually changed in himself, too. He wouldn't have cared a brass tack about it before, but now he is even taking the thing off and is hanging it up in the darkest corner of the place.
"Too hot in here," he says sourly when he sees me watching him.
I nod.
"And your father?"
he asks gloomily after a time. "Bookbinder," I reply.
"Really?"
he begins to revive.
"And Albert's? What's his?"
"He's dead, but he used to be a locksmith."
"Locksmith?"
he repeats joyfully, as though that were as much as to say the Pope himself.
"Locksmith, eh? Why, that's grand. I'm a fitter myself. We will have been near colleagues then, as you might say, no?"
"That's so," I say. The blood of the old army Kozola is mounting again in Kozola the civilian. He takes color and force again.
"It would have been a pity otherwise,"
he assures me energetically. And now, just as Tjaden strolls by to make another wry face, without a word and without shifting on his seat, he plants one superbly aimed kick.
He is his old self again.
The door into the main hall has started banging. The first of the boys are coming. We go in. The empty room, with paper garlands and tables still unset, gives a disagreeable impression. A few groups are standing about in corners. I discover Julius Wedekamp in his faded old military tunic and hastily push aside a few chairs and go to greet him.
How goes it, Julius? I say.
Haven't forgotten you owe me a mahogany cross, I hope, have you? You wanted to make me one out of a piano lid, remember? Bear it in mind, old turnip.
I might have done with it myself, Ernst, he says gloomily. You know my wife died.
Damn it, Julius, but I'm sorry to hear that, I say.
What was the trouble?
He shrugs his shoulders.
Knocked herself out with the everlasting standing about in queues outside the shops all the winter. Then a baby came, and that finished her.
And the baby, I ask.
Died too.
He hunches his drooping shoulders as if he were freezing.
Yes, and Scheffler's dead too, Ernst. You knew that, I suppose.
I shake my head. How did that happen? Wedekamp lights his pipe.
He got a crack in the head, you know. 1917, wasn't it? Anyway, it healed up all right at the time. Then, about 6 weeks ago, he suddenly developed such awful, bloody pains that he kept running his head against the wall. It took four of us to get him off to the hospital. Inflammation or something. He pegged out the next day.
He takes a second match.
Yes, and now they don't want to give his wife a pension.
And Gerhard Pohl, I inquire.
He can't come. Fassbender and Freitag neither. Out of work. Not even enough money for the grub. They would like to have come too, the old boys.
The room has about half filled in the meantime. We meet many others of our old pals, but it is strange. The old spirit is missing. And we have been looking forward to this reunion for weeks, hoping it would clear up for us all sorts of worries and uncertainties and misunderstandings. Perhaps it is because of the civilian clothes sprinkled about everywhere among the military togs. Or maybe that profession and family and social standing, like so many wedges, have split us asunder. But certain it is, the old feeling of comradeship has gone. Everything is topsy-turvy. There is Bosse, for instance, the standing joke of the whole company, who was always having jokes played on him because he was such a poor fool. Out there he used to be so filthy, dirty, and rotten that more than once we had to put him under the pump. And now here he is, sitting among us in a flash worsted suit with a pearl tie pin and spats, quite a well-to-do fellow with a big line of talk. And beside him is Adolf Bethke, who towered above him so out there that he was glad if Bethke would so much as speak to him. And yet Bethke is now suddenly nothing but a poor village cobbler with a bit of a farm holding. And Ludwig Breyer, instead of a lieutenant's uniform, he now wears a shiny, too tightly fitting school suit with a boy's knitted cravat tied askew around his neck. And his former Batman is slapping him familiarly on the back, once more the plumber in a large way of business in water closet fittings and owner of fine premises on the main business street. Then there is Valentin. Under his ragged open tunic is an old blue and white sweater. He looks like a tramp, but my God, what a soldier. And Lederhose, the dirty dog, sitting there alongside him, full of importance in a shiny top hat and a canary yellow Macintosh, and smoking English cigarettes. It is all turned bottom up. Still, that might pass. But even the talk is different, and that comes from the clothes, too. Fellows who formerly wouldn't have said boo to a goose are now playing the heavy uncle, The men with good clothes have a patronizing air, and those with shabby ones are for the most part silent. A schoolmaster, who was formerly a corporal and a bad one at that, condescends to ask Carl and Ludwig about their examination. If I were Ludwig, I'd pour my beer down his neck. Carl, thank heaven, makes a few unflattering remarks about education and examinations and the rest of it, and extols business and trade instead. The talk here makes me quite ill. I would rather we had never come together again. Then at least we might still have preserved a memory. In vain do I try to picture all these fellows in dirty uniforms again, and this Konersmann's restaurant as a canteen in the rest area. It cannot be done. The things here are stronger. The things that differentiate us from one another are too powerful. The common interest is no longer decisive. It has broken up already and given place to the interest of the individual. Now and then something still will shine through from that other time when we all wore the same rig, but already it is dwindled and dim. These others here are still our comrades, and yet our comrades no longer. That is what is so sad. All else went west in the war, but comradeship we did believe in. Now only to find that what death could not do, life is achieving. It is driving us asunder. But we are unwilling to believe it. We all sit down at one table together. Ludwig, Albert, Carl, Adolf, Willi, Tjaden, Valentin. A feeling of gloom is over us. Anyway, we'll stick together, says Albert, glancing toward the big room. We agree and shake hands on it, whilst over yonder, the good clothes are already beginning to draw their chairs closer together. We do not mean to be party to this reclassification. We will start with what the others are discarding. Come on, Adolf, I say to Bethke. Join in too. He lays his great paw on our hands, and for the first time in many a day, he is smiling again. We sit together a while, but Adolf Bethke soon goes. He looks rather bad. I remind myself that I must go and see him one of these days. A waiter appears and whispers something to Tjaden. He dismisses him with a shake of the head. Ladies have no business here. We look up in surprise. Tjaden smiles, flattered. The waiter returns, and behind him, with quick strides, comes a great strapping wench. Tjaden is taken aback. We grin, but no, he knows how to look after himself. He makes a grand gesture. My fiancé. For Tjaden, that ends the matter, so Willi undertakes the further introductions. He begins with Ludwig and ends up with himself. Then he invites the girl to be seated. She does so. Willi sits down beside her and rests his arm along the back of her chair. Your father is the famous butcher at Neuengraben, I believe, he says, by way of opening the conversation. The girl nods. Willi draws up closer. That does not worry Tjaden in the slightest. He laps up his beer contentedly. But under Willi's gay and insistent talk, the young lady begins to thaw. I've so much wanted to meet you, gentlemen, she tells us. Deary has told me so often about you, but whenever I asked him to bring you out, he never would. What? Says Willi, annihilating Tjaden with a glance. Bring us out. But of course, we should be awfully pleased, really, most extraordinarily pleased to come. The old rascal, he never said a word of it to us. Tjaden begins to show signs of uneasiness. Kozola leans forward. So Deary has often told you about us, has he? And what has he told you exactly, I wonder? We must be going now, Marichen, Tjaden breaks in, making to rise. But Kozola pushes him down again into his chair. Pray, be seated, Deary.
What did he tell you, Fräulein?
Mariechen is utterly confiding. She looks at Willy coyly.
Would you be Herr Hohmeyer?
Willy bows to the butchery.
Then it was you he saved,
she prattles on, while Theoden fidgets in his chair as if he were seated on an ant heap.
But you haven't forgotten, surely?
Willy holds his head.
I was buried afterwards, you know, he explains. And that plays the very deuce with a man's memory. It was most unfortunate. Such a lot of things slipped my memory then.
Saved?
Asks Kozola eagerly.
I'm going, Mariechen. Are you coming or aren't you?
Says Theoden. Kozola holds him fast.
He is so shy,
giggles Mariechen, beaming.
And first he had to kill three Negroes who wanted to butcher Herr Hohmeyer with their tomahawks. One of them with his fist, too.
With his fist, repeats Kozola in a hollow voice.
Yes, and the rest with their own tomahawks. And then afterwards, he carried you back.
Mariechen surveys Willy's 6'5½" and nods approbation of her fiancé.
There's no harm in telling for once of what you did, dearie.
Oh, indeed, agrees Kozola. That's the thing that ought to be told. Once?
For a moment, Willy gazes deliciously into Mariechen's eyes.
Yes, he's a wonderful fellow, he assures her.
Then he nods across at Theoden.
Just come outside with me a moment.
Theoden rises dubiously, but Willy means no harm. A few minutes later, and the two reappear arm in arm. Willy stoops down to Mariechen.
Well, so that's settled. I'll be calling around tomorrow evening. I have still to thank him for rescuing me from those Negroes. But you know, I saved your fiancé once, too.
No, did you really?
Says Mariechen, astonished.
Perhaps I'll tell you about that, too, someday, grins Willy.
With a sigh of relief, Theoden now steams out with his lady.
You see, they're slaughtering tomorrow, says Willy.
But nobody is listening. We have had to control ourselves too long already, and we burst into shrieks of laughter, whinnying like a stable full of starved horses. Kozola almost makes himself sick, he shakes so. It is long before Willy can tell us what a very advantageous contract he has been able to make with Theoden for a steady supply of horse sausage.
I've got the old man in the hollow of my hand, he grins.